Anime Pacific 83, starring Dane Scaysbrook from...
That's horrible. It's worse than usual. Yeah. Isn't Regan's podcast Anime
82.
Oh, so that was last week's show, was the opportunity to riff on that. Well, we missed it. Oh, well. Well, this week, it's going to be slightly different format because, well, we blew a lot of time playing Borderlands. So, we got this new game, Borderlands, and it's a co-op shooter, basically. And, you know, and we fired it up, Dane and I, audience, and... you know, we said, oh, we should record, but, you know, let's just try Borderlands for a little bit, then we'll record. Sure enough, 3 hours later, we're like, oh, crap, I gotta go to work at 5 in the morning, and it's 10:30, and we gotta record something. here it is. But it won't be garbage, because we'll record an introduction here, the two of us, and then Dane will do a review later.
And, yeah, that's
right. I might do one as well. But it'll have to be separately. So, yes. So there you are.
That's dedication anyway.
It is. Pulling ourselves away from that Borderlands, which is a great co-op, but single player, it seems kind of pointless. But I recommend it if you've got a buddy and you like shooters.
Yep.
Check it out. But in news, we're pondering making this podcast bi-weekly.
Yes, well, I think it's going to be kind of necessary at this stage. Bi-monthly, we should say. That means one episode of fortnightly.
No. Bi-monthly is every 2 months. Bi-weekly is every 2 weeks.
I thought that would mean two times a week.
No.
Okay.
Oh, wait. I don't know. Audience, what do you say? I'm pretty sure bi-weekly means every 2 weeks. Don't we have a dictionary? I don't know. Maybe it's just my tiredness kicking in, but I'm pretty sure. yes. But that'll give Dane more time to actually watch stuff.
Yeah, I was going to watch the Baki Monogatari that you recommended, and then my power box had a problem on that night, so I had to go and get it fixed.
See, now it's... Connie burning it out with those vibrators is... no, sorry, that's horrible.
I mean, my computer power box, unless it's a USB vibrator, there's not much to do.
Oh, I see. So not your...
no, not my home power. Anyway, Connie's not here at the moment. Unfortunately, she is in Australia with my daughter. They're visiting my parents for 2 weeks, and they'll be back next week. But anyway, yeah, so as we said, it's probably going to be necessary for the podcast to be twice a month, because, as you've probably guessed, the one episode a week schedule is a little bit too much for us, considering how busy we are, especially me. So
yeah, like for the past few shows, like we'd record like clockwork on a Friday, but Dane wouldn't be able to the release date keeps slipping back by like 8 days and then 9 days to edit the show. So last time, episode 82, we recorded on the Friday, and then Dane didn't put it out until like the following Friday. You know? So it's getting a bit crazy.
But what we really want to do, or what I would like to do, is help the show find its feet a little bit more. I think if we make this fortnightly, then we can certainly have an increase in quality. Quality over quantity. That's one of the directions the show is going in.
Well, we hope. Anyway. But,
yes.
So I'm sure everybody's going to complain. Quality, and then Dane proceeds to blow his nose.
Crap, I tried to mute that, but it half of it was muted. The really graphic parts were muted, so
there's all that. Right. Well, but there's been a lot of anime developments, and I have been striving to keep the show more on an anime topic. And if you haven't noticed, you know, I don't know if as Dane said, he hasn't had time to watch Bakemono. I'm just going to call it Bakemono because the full thing is too long.
Yep.
But Bakemono, I want to point out that by following my recommendation of the previous episode, they released episode 13, a webisode, and the for whatever reason, it's the, what I got, it's not a high-definition file. I guess it's like a flash
file.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of so-so. It's like, you know, it's not quite... it's like 640 by 480, you know, something along those lines. It's like VHS, yes. Or, you know, it's not so... So hopefully when they get around to releasing the Blu-ray of all this, which I highly recommend. So, because apparently the animation studio is increasing the quality of the animation for the Blu-ray release, which is why, you know, I watched the first two episodes from Thor Anime, and I was blown away by the animation quality. And then, you know, it's sort of a bit of a dip for the rest of the series. Well, that's because I watched the Blu-ray version. So I highly recommend that. It's 1080p at Thor Anime. And they've completed all the animation for that Blu-ray version, increasing the quality. And you can see at Sankaku, and I think, Dane, you linked to it at the post in episode 82.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, the sort of the before and after for a lot of these, for the Blu-ray version compared to the air-to-television version. So highly recommend if you can't end getting the Blu-ray version of that. And it's definitely worth a watch, even if you suffer through the episodes 9 and 10, which were not so good. Also, Darker Than Black, I want to say all my worries that I talked about a few episodes ago after watching episode 3 were completely unfounded. Suo has turned into a great character, not an annoying teenager now that she's... Okay, spoiler. Now that she's a contractor, she's become not annoying. Unspoiler. If that's a term. So,
this is not a forum.
Yes, that's right. People fast-forwarding can't exactly be that precise.
You've even put in the like HTML spoiler.
That's right.
/ non-spoiler.
That's right. No, but not annoying. The only person that might be annoying is this, now that, I'm not sure how to word this without giving stuff away, but Suo and the gang, we'll put it that way, have moved on, and she's attracted kind of a boy, or boy, this guy, I'm going to say, because he's got to be like 17 or something, you know, he's in his... You know, he's in late high school for sure.
Yep.
And he's, for whatever reason, has fallen for her on first sight. I mean, she just walked by, and all of a sudden he's, like, falling over and following her around like a dog, you know, trying to woo her. And, of course, she has, like, zero interest. So this guy's got this transvestite father... whose mother became a contractor.
Okay, let's not get personal here. Back to the story again.
No, but it's a bit over the top, you know. I mean, this guy's transvestite father owns a bar, and you know he wears dresses, and he's, you know, he's unshaven. He looks ridiculous. You know, it would have been fine. Just make him like a normal father and running the bar, and it would have been, you know, more realistic. And this is supposed to be sort of adult-oriented anime. And it's because, like that just sort of kiddifies it just a bit too much. Like Jar Jar in friggin', you know, the new Star Wars movies. You know, it's just trying to, it's kiddifying it a bit too much. They fixed Suo. She's great now. No problems on that front. But this, this guy who's 17, and Suo is like 11 or 12 or something. The whole thing's perverted. you know, it's disturbing on that side. And secondly, it's not going anywhere. And although this latest episode that I just watched, episode 6, had sort of a moving, well, it tried to be moving story with this guy and his mother who became a contractor, and you know, and she's sort of returns briefly, and of course, because she's a contractor, the mother has no emotions anymore, so doesn't really care about the son. So it tried to be have an emotional tug there, but it's hard because the whole situation is so stupid with the transvestite father and the crazy antics. It's a bit over the top for me. But then again, they had that over the top detective and the detective assistant in that first season.
Yeah, I love that guy though.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe some guys. There's just been even season one. There's a bit of a quirkiness. So I guess they're following that tradition. But I don't know. It's.
And it was actually voted by, in Japan, it was voted by I don't know how many otaku, and it was said to have been their favorite. Believe it or not, you know, I was expecting some Super Moe show, which I think was second. I can't even remember which show was voted second now, but Darker Than Black Season 2 is their favorite show of the season, so it's nice
good
to see.
Yeah, well, my recommendation from 2 years ago has paid off.
Yeah, and right, the music,
I really want to say this, the music in Season 2 is friggin', it's overwhelming me now. Like I think it's just so much better, especially the intro song. In the first season, it was sort of, you know, I guess it fit the mood more. It was a bit harder edged, but in this second season, they've got Stereo Pony, which is a Japanese girl rock group, who sang the opening or closing theme to Gundam, was it 00? What is it?
Oh, the new one.
Yeah.
I think it's just Zero, isn't it?
Gundam Zero. Yeah, something like that. Yeah. But anyway, they friggin' rock. Like you've heard the opening theme already, actually. But I was listening to it like over and over again just because it's so good. And I found the video. Is online. It's the full video of the opening theme. It's called, the opening theme's title is pardon my butchering of this. Tsukiakari no Michi. I should get my wife to come over and read this out.
I thought that was her. That sounded so fluent.
Yeah. Okay, my wife is here. She's going to read the title. Go ahead. Speak into the mic.
Tsukiakari no Michishiru.
Nobody picked that up. Say that again.
Tsukiakari no Michishirube.
Thank you. There it is. That's the title of the song, Stereo Pony. Thank you, Kaori. All right. So that's very long. But they're friggin' awesome. So I want everybody to check out that YouTube video. I'm going to send Dane the link. He'll post it in the show notes. But most important, or if not more important, I'm sure if you're, you know, under 35, 30, you've heard of the replacement show for Conan, Late Night with Conan O'Brien. It's Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. He's sort of the, you know, hip among the young people. And he has a, you know, forum, obviously, at the NBC website where you can, you know, request musical acts to book on the show, and he does this actually. You know, they got a guy there perusing the forum. His job is to look at the forum, and if enough people request a group, that he puts them on the show. So I thought we should have a campaign to get Stereo Pony on the show.
Yeah, or any sort of, you know, J-pop or K-pop, you know.
Yeah, but let's rally around Stereo Pony. Here's the link, Dane. So, but if you don't want to, or for some reason this link won't work, just go to the NBC website and their forum, and the Late Night with Jimmy Fallon forum. There's a sticky there at the top of the forum for what band or solo artist would you like to see perform on Late Night with Jimmy Fallon? There's a sticky there from the web producer. And I made my post requesting the Stereo Pony on page 20. So if everybody can follow my lead and back me up to get Stereo Pony on the show, that would be great. We got enough people. We got 100 listeners, about. If at least, if even, you know, friggin' 20% of these listeners here, if you guys go to the website, it just takes you a second to register, fucking post, Stereo Pony.
Jimmy Fallon's an anime fan too, isn't he? So he would be...
Oh, he's into, yeah, like he's, you know, he's like 28, so he's not the, you know, a no yaji. He knows what's what, and he tries to be trendy, and so hopefully this will work. So Dane, if you could post the video, music video on our site, which I sent you the link, and the that link to the forum.
And if you want to go to the forum, it's htboards.mpc.com/nbcindex.php?show topic=81/3165. That's only the first line, people. Yes, I'll post the link in the show notes anyway, and you can go straight there and visit it and tell him that Anime Pacific, a much more powerful show, is demanding him to put Fire Apple on his show.
Fire Apple?
Sorry, what's their name?
Stereo Pony.
Sorry. Okay. Close enough.
Fire.
So we want...
But these chicks are hot. And, you know, they got to be early 20s. They can sing. The lead singer there, she writes her own music, too.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Plays the lead guitar and sings. And the chick on drums sings the harmonies. It's, they rock. I like these chicks. Watch some of their other videos on here. I don't know what they're saying, but it's a toe-tapping good
kill all gaijins, kill all their families, kill all gaijins.
Yes, it could be for all I know. But, yeah, I think it's doable if we get enough people. So, Stereo Pony, the forum, NBC forum, NBC.com, Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. Get over there. Thank you. Okay, so now it's time for the review section of the show. Now, unfortunately, it's getting late here, almost 11 o'clock, and I got to get up at 5 in the morning, probably, for work. So Dane's going to have to do this review solo. So much obliged, Dane.
Not at all, my friend, not at all.
Yes, but for the rest of you, goodbye from me. See you next time.
Okay, and... For me, I shall be reviewing one of my most favorite live-action films of all time, Kamikaze Taxi.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, great. Another new treasure trove from Dane. All right. All right, awesome.
Here at the Fight Bait Anime Podcast, we strive to bring you a different type of anime review.
The only other... shows I've seen where girls pilot robots, they're naked when they do it.
Making sure to touch on the high points of the shows we cover.
The Chain Patriot backdropped a snake.
And also the low points.
Incognito is probably one of the worst anime character designs I've ever seen in my entire life.
We also have game coverage.
If you haven't played Super Mario World, get the f*** off of my podcast.
Poor geographical knowledge.
Dude, Hong Kong is like the capital of Japan, isn't it?
And the infamous Whiskey Thursday.
The moral of the story here is... when you have a problem, you only need to find the right drink.
So come check out the Fight Bait Anime Podcast at www.fightbait.com. You can also find it in the iTunes Music Store. Fight Bait Anime.
It's like the pie. You know, I don't know how it's like the pie. I was trying to do a metaphor there, and I failed.
Because what the world needed was another anime podcast.
いいよ、昭和。だから。<音楽>
about 12 years since I first heard that Incan tune, and it never left my head ever since. This entire song is pretty much all of Kamikaze Taxi's soundtrack, but I never get sick of it, and it never seems stale throughout the film, but it's always used to very good effect. Kamikaze Taxi, which came from 1994, is probably one of my most favorite live-action films ever. Definitely my favorite Japanese live-action film. It had been several years since I saw it, my first viewing being on an excellent cable TV station in Australia called World Movies, which you had to pay extra for, but I happily did, and a VHS tape I made from that recording. And eventually, when I moved to Hong Kong in 2000, I bought the VCD. I think, to my knowledge, that was the only digital version available, was the Hong Kong VCD. And Alex has actually seen this, but he won't be with me for this review, and he saw it almost 10 years ago, so I don't know if he has a great recollection of this film or not. I know that he pretty much enjoyed it, but I don't think it resonated with him as it does with me. Finally, along with the Due South DVD collection that Alex keeps bringing up that my mother bought me for my birthday, she also got the Media Blasters, yes, the American anime licensor, Media Blasters DVD edition of this, which was quite cheap, you know, like $10 or so. And this is actually a longer cut than the one I've seen before. The other cut was 2 hours and 20 minutes, which I believe is the international cut. And the 3-hour cut, which is on the Media Blasters under their Tokyo Shock label, is about 3 hours. And don't let the name of that label turn you off Tokyo Shock. It indicates kind of a niche Japsploitation, if that's a word. You know, Japanese exploitation, which this is not. It's actually a deeply insightful, intelligent, excellent film. Now, you probably hear the Inca-esque panpipe music in the background, and you're thinking, well, how is this relevant to a Japanese film, especially one with kamikaze in the title? It's actually highly relevant, as Peru and Peruvian culture factors very highly in this film. The film and its themes probably could not have been made at a better time than 1994, the time when Japanese politics were, and still are, going through a lot of scandals, resignations, and general turmoil and chaos. I suppose not much has changed. And President Fujimori, obviously a Japanese expatriate, was elected as the leader of Peru. The film starts with various interviews from real repatriated Japanese who were born or early in their life immigrated to South America, which of course following World War II was a very common thing to do. These interviews in and of themselves are actually extremely interesting and insightful. Each of these new migrants discusses the discrimination they face and how difficult it is to readjust, despite the fact, and this is quite true and not just unique to Japan in any sense of the word, but they hold old ideals, most of them more positive ideals, of Japan, which have since, in Japan's growth and I suppose to a certain extent westernization, no longer really are very prevalent. Yet one of them argues that perhaps these Japanese repatriates are actually more Japanese than modern Japanese. Yet what is uniquely Japanese is this distinct type of discrimination against those who were born overseas or are repatriated or have lived overseas for an extensive amount of time, and perhaps they have a slightly different accent or different mannerisms or something a little bit different. They're essentially treated as utterly foreign. The last of these interviews highlights the plight of one Peruvian Japanese who said he came to Japan to try and get a better job and a better life, and with 2 years' salary in Japan, he could live wonderfully in Peru. And he had all these dreams, but finally, all he could be was a taxi driver. Finally, the music starts and the film begins proper with the subtitle, Japan has over 90,000 Yakuza, 140,000 returning immigrants, and a few crooked politicians who manipulate people. Sometimes these three paths are crossed. This movie is essentially that tale. And the film starts with a young Yakuza called Tatsuo, who's in charge of, well, basically, he's kind of a, I wouldn't say pimp, but a manager of girls for prostitution, basically, though specifically to more high-profile clients. In this case, it is a Japanese politician called Domon, an utterly disgusting, corrupt Japanese Diet member who, I suppose, is akin to an extreme right-wing Japanese person. He proudly flaunts his Japanese-ness and proudly recounts both his years as a kamikaze pilot, which he mysteriously survived, and Japan's wartime past, something this movie is not afraid to deal with. It turns out that Domon is an extremely cruel individual and sadistic, and it's pretty much a given, apparently, that whenever he requests girls to be sent to him, they come back badly beaten and bruised. Tetsuo's girlfriend is basically, we can say, the madam of these prostitutes, and she is utterly disgusted and aghast when one of the girls she sends to pleasure Domon comes back utterly beaten and cut and in a terrible state. Utterly enraged, Tetsuo's girlfriend screams and yells at the Tetsuo's Yakuza overlords to the effect of, how can you let this bastard do this? I'm going to kill the scumbag. Animaru, Tetsuo's boss, also has an extremely mean side to him. He beats Tetsuo's girlfriend to death right in front of him, finally stepping on her throat and choking her to death in a very chilling scene. Tetsuo, in, I suppose we could say, typical Japanese passive aggressiveness, watches, is utterly mortified, and as soon as his boss leaves the room, he bangs his head against the wall in rage. When he goes home, his buddy, who was actually kind of the pimp before him and was promoted, said, look, can you take care of this girl, the one that Domon beat the crap out of, because she's not going to be able to do anything for a while until she recovers. In a discussion with Tatsuo, the girl, called Tama, reveals to Tatsuo that Domon doesn't trust banks and has stashed about $2 million in cash in a pot just near his bedroom, some of which he threw at her to try and pay her off after being beaten almost to death. With this, Tatsuo decides that, with some of his old high school buddies, to exact revenge on Domon by, you guessed it, a robbery. And the robbery itself is quite hectic and chaotic. They manage to make off with the money. Unfortunately, they're all tracked rather quickly by Tatsuo's boss, Animaru, who is essentially Domon's Yakuza liaison. How many stupid punks rent 5 tuxedos at once in Tokyo, he says. He's probably got a point there. Tetsuo's friends are slaughtered before his eyes, but he manages to escape with the money with one other friend, who is shot in the back. Finally, they retreat to a football or soccer court, and his friend, while dying, said, if there's one wish I have for you, Tatsuo, go out with a bang. A kamikaze bang, knowing that he's got the money but he's going to be tracked to the ends of the earth. Tatsuo sees that there is probably no real solution except to go out with a bang and exact revenge against both Domon and Animaru in the process. He's got some unfinished business that he'd like to use his money for in the countryside, including buying a much better gravestone for his departed mother. And he enlists the aforementioned Peruvian taxi driver for this journey. And to quote the excellent Japanese cinema website Midnight Eye, which is at midnighteye.com, and I will link to this review in the show notes, Midnight Eye's review, it is the start of a very long cab ride indeed, and with it, the film's tone switches. The gangster action film becomes a road movie and gains a soul in the process. The taxi driver, Kantaki, last name Fried Chicken, okay, that was bad. The taxi driver, Kantaki, first appears as a relatively quiet, withdrawn, shy individual with a rather shaky command of Japanese. Gradually, as Tatsuo and Kantaki confide in each other, we learn a little bit more about him. Kantaki drives a beaten-up, graffitied station wagon, and as I said, he's not a taxi driver by choice, but because that's all that he can really do in a society where he is discriminated against. It's only natural that he becomes a natural ally of Tatsuo when he learns more about Tatsuo's situation and about Domon, who symbolizes the society that has spit him out, which for Tatsuo is definitely a good thing, because his new ally is indeed someone you would not want to mess with. What he has gone through in Peru, a culture he feels a great affinity with, would utterly put any of these macho Yakuza to shame. He actually runs into Animaru, Tatsuo's boss, early on in the film when he's driving a passenger across who yells at Animaru for beeping the horn and pushing their taxi out of the way, which almost results in an altercation, but when Kantaki tries to defuse the situation, Animaru suddenly calms down and feels a great calm around Kantaki and says, "You know, I feel me and that guy could have been buddies." Eventually, the girl that was beaten by Domon, Tama, joins the three on their journey. I've always loved the road movie, or the narrative device of the journey, which, while we know Tatsuo is being chased, the whole journey itself serves more to develop the characters than turn into any sort of chase movie. The way in which Kantaki, although he doesn't get much screen time in the first hour of the film, shifts to the main character is very cleverly done. The characters are so amazingly, thoroughly, wonderfully developed that you can't help but care for them. Even Tatsuo, who was initially somewhat of a headstrong Yakuza, turns out to be quite noble in many ways. One of the extended scenes, which was not there in the international cut, was actually the onsen, where there is an entire scene that goes for almost half an hour, where they have some sort of character-building workshop by a party entertainer who was actually a teacher before he became an entertainer. And while this might appear to be superfluous to some people, it's actually great for building the characters. I was glad that it was included, although it does go for a little bit long, that extra scene. Also, cut throughout the film, or added throughout the film in the version I saw, are little interviews by the main characters and other characters that they meet along the way. I can see why this was cut for the international edition. Whilst it does add to the characters, they often say things that we knew, although they were unsaid. What's fascinating, although unsurprising when you learn more about the director, is how much the film actually criticizes Japan. Indeed, the right-wing politician Domon emphasizes his Japanese-ness, although he represents a very ugly side of Japan as, in fact, morally corrupt. Kantaki, on the other hand, symbolizes the more positive aspects of Japanese society, yet is excluded from being just that. When one knows more about the director, you can see where that criticism comes from. The director, Masato Harada, who you might actually know because he has been in, he's actually done some acting very recently, and he's been in a few films. If you might recall The Last Samurai, there was a bespectacled Japanese guy who, the one who enticed Tom Cruise to go to, his character's name was in fact Omura. And he was also in Jet Li's Fearless as Mita, very similar character actually, but that's actually Masato Harada. And part of the reason that he thinks this way and he has a certain detachedness from his home country is because he left early in the 70s first to learn English, And it was there, when he was learning English, that he became somewhat of a protege to the classic filmmaker, Howard Hawks. He also spent a lot of his time in America working as a journalist for, I believe, the New York Times. Upon returning to Japan, his children were bullied and treated like they were aliens, despite the fact that they, at least ethnically, were Japanese. This in and of itself is also not unique to Japan. The immoral, the corrupt, the far-right wing often emphasize their nationality, yet paradoxically exist utterly in contrast to what their nation represents. I myself have had similar experiences to Harada when looking at Australia. However, I have certainly not had any prejudice against me upon returning there, when I occasionally do. But I've had that sense of detachedness where I can criticize it and have a look at some of the flaws of it, which I'm sure someone can do for any country. Yet at the same time, the Japan he depicts, a lot more real than Japan, than the Japan that you often see in a lot of films, is also filmed in a much more beautiful way. The beautiful, peaceful part of Japan is captured in just such a wonderful way, which could probably only be captured by someone who can really appreciate those positive aspects of Japan. Who better than someone who has been away and can capture that Japanese uniqueness, for he knows that it is unique. Someone who has lived there all their life could probably not see what is unique, because it is just taken for granted. Harada actually made a sci-fi film in the late 80s called Gunhead, which was actually poorly received in Japan, but was quite successful overseas, and apparently James Cameron took notice and wanted to do some sort of project with Harada, which never materialized. But I can see where James Cameron's appeal for that film lies, in that he's also been very interested in Battle Angel Alita, and Gunhead does have a similar aesthetic. Some of you might have actually already seen Gunhead, because it was released by Manga Entertainment, at least in Australia and the UK. Harada has also made some somewhat critical of Japan films, Bounce Co Girls, which I do recommend, and a whole bunch of other films, both overseas and in Japan. He was an international filmmaker, really, before he became a Japanese filmmaker. Again, this is one of my most favourite films of all time, and it's really quite unique. Even at 3 hours long, it doesn't feel too long. The journey is rendered so beautifully that you really don't want it to end. The characters are developed so well that you'd well accept a movie that was 12 hours long about them. The cab driver, Kentucky, is utterly fascinating, and really, when that guy decides who's his enemy, you've got to watch out. The ending itself is fantastic, not because there's any great twist or it goes out with a huge bang, but because the ending so typifies the character of Kentucky. It's just a wonderful ending, and I love it. Personally, I also love this film because I saw it shortly after my first trip in Japan in 1997, and although this film was filmed in 1994, I also saw the film in 1997, and it looks just like how I remembered Japan when I visited there in 1997. And although I've been there several times since then, although it hasn't changed drastically, you can still notice a few little changes, and it looks exactly how I remembered it in 1997. So, I mean, there's a little bit of something personal and nostalgic there for me. And despite the fact that it shows a side of Japan that not many people see, I think it's important that people see that side. It's not going to make you burn the Japanese flag or anything like that. In fact, it'll probably want to make you visit Japan even more, because, as I said, Harada has a gift of showcasing a certain rustic beauty of Japan, which is not often shown in films and can probably only be depicted by someone, as I said, who has lived overseas and thus knows what makes the Japanese landscape unique. It is not a crazy action extravaganza. Of course, there is some action, but it's definitely not an action film at all. If you like a wonderful pace, really well-developed characters, and an emotional, often controversial storyline, then Kamikaze Taxi is definitely the way to go. This gets the strongest recommendation I've ever given for a live-action film in fact, probably the strongest recommendation for anything, because I just think it's wonderful. Just on a little side note for anyone who's seen this and would like to discuss it with me, have you noticed, and this is not really a spoiler at all, have you noticed that the director seems to have a certain, I suppose, trademark in that scenes of extreme chaos, someone is inappropriately calm. Note scene one, or the first scene where this happens that I noticed it, is during the robbery in Domon's house. They're running around, shooting the walls, going crazy, left, right, and center, yet one guy is just kind of dismissively brushing his teeth. He really doesn't give a damn. The second scene is a scene where Kentucky gets back to Japan about halfway through the film and goes on a shooting spree inside Animaru's office. Again, there is one character who is just making little clippings of paper. No matter what he's doing, he's shooting people left, right, and center. It's utter chaos. And this guy is just sitting there cutting little strips of paper. It's utterly hilarious, but I wonder if there's some deeper message or symbolism in that. The third time is, and I think this might be the same guy, they're cleaning up the chaos, and I think they're also in a hostess bar. If you can imagine, you probably played the computer game or the PS2 game Yakuza, you know what a hostess bar looks like. They're cleaning up all these shattered glass and stuff, and there is one guy just sitting there having a drink, and the kind of the Aniki or Big Brother smacks him across the head, and then the guy gets up and looks like he's helping, but then when the Big Brother turns around again, the guy sits back down and has a drink. It's quite funny, and you won't catch it on your first viewing perhaps, but it is something for discussion. So those of you who have seen it, and those of you who love it, or even those who don't, please comment at the website at Anime Pacific, www.animepacific.blogspot.com. And that brings an end to another episode of Anime Pacific. Again, we will be moving to a fortnightly release. I think that will increase the quality. I'm sorry we couldn't give you a longer episode or a Alex heavy episode today, but I was glad to have the opportunity to review something that I've always wanted to review, and I wouldn't have Alex saying, "Oh, hurry up, man, I'm so sleepy, eh?" But we got a lot of plans for the show, and if you've got any recommendations for the show, anything you want to contribute to the show, let us know. I think it's possible to get the show back to what it once was, especially when we had, 500 listeners. And incidentally, check out Lathers Blather, www.lathersblather.blogspot.com. It's linked in our website, because Jeff Duterik has released a new episode, something he hasn't done in almost 6 months, which is great. So go check it out. It's about the second Transformers movie, which I think me and Alex, and evidently Jeff Duterik doesn't like either. So do check that out. If you are interested in archaeology and wish to see relics of times long ago, then visit Anime 82 and RPG Lamer. Unearth the mystery of these mysterious, unupdated podcasts. Yes, I am giving you guys a kick in the butt to release new episodes. And check out Upper Paddle, because Kent is actually releasing episodes at a much faster pace, pretty much a weekly pace, which is great. And I also won a competition there, which I feel a bit guilty about because I was being a douche. But do check out Upper Paddle. It's one of my favorite shows. So, until next week. Bye-bye, everybody. 答えのない毎日がただ過ぎてゆく時間